Good evening. I remember hearing a quote when I was a child that really didn't make a lot of sense to me. And I never figured out what Charles Dickens meant when he said it. I never read his book to see what it was about. But it was one of those quotes that sticks in your mind and like you think about it sometimes. I've got some thoughts on it. Here's what Charles Dickens said. He said, "It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of wisdom. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. We had everything before us. We had nothing before us." Like I said, I don't know what he meant. But I've been thinking about that some. What time is it? Let's look at some things here in the Bible. 1 Kings chapter 3. Starting in verse 3. "And Solomon loved the Lord and walked in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and burned incense in the high places. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. 1,000 burnt offerings did Solomon offer upon that altar in Gibeon. The Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night, and God said, 'Ask what I shall give thee.' And Solomon said, 'Thou hast showed unto thy servant David my father great mercy, according as he walked before thee in truth, and in righteousness, and in uprightness of heart with thee. And thou hast kept for him this great kindness, that thou hast given him a son to sit on his throne, as it is this day. And now, O Lord my God, thou hast made thy servant king instead of David my father, and I am but a little child, I know not how to go out or come in. And thy servant is with them, is in the midst of thy people, which thou hast chosen, a great people that cannot be numbered nor counted for multitude. Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy so great a people?' And the speech pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this thing. And God said unto him, 'Because thou hast asked this thing, and hast not asked for thyself long life, neither hast asked riches for thyself, nor hast asked the life of thine enemies, but hast asked for thyself understanding to discern judgment. Behold, I have done according to thy word. Lo, I have given thee a wise and an understanding heart, so that there was none like thee before thee, neither shall after thee shall any arise like unto thee.'" God was pleased with Solomon, pleased with what Solomon asked, and he gives it to Solomon. And we go on down in the chapter, and we see an example of this, down in verse 16. "And there came two women that were harlots unto the king, and stood before him. And the one woman said, 'O my lord, I and this woman dwell in one house, and I was delivered of a child with her in the house. And it came to pass the third day after that I was delivered, that this woman was delivered also, and we were together. There was no stranger with us in the house, save we two in the house. And this woman's child died in the night, because she overlaid it. And she arose at midnight, and took my son from beside me, while thine handmaid slept, and laid it in her bosom, and laid her dead child in my bosom. And when I rose in the morning to give my child suck, behold, it was dead. But when I had considered it in the morning, behold, it was not my son which I did bear.' And the other woman said, 'Nay, but the living is my son, and the dead is thy son.' And this said, 'No, but the dead is thy son, and the living is my son.' Thus they spake before the king. Then said the king, 'The one saith, This is my son that liveth, and thy son is dead. And the other saith, Nay, but thy son is dead, and my son is the living. The king said, bring me a sword. And they brought a sword before the king, and the king said, divide the living child in two, and give half to the one and half to the other. Then spake the woman whose the living child was unto the king, for her bowels yearned upon her son. And she said, O my lord, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. But the other said, let it be neither mine nor thine, but divide it. Then the king answered and said, give her the living child, and in no wise slay it. She is the mother thereof. And all Israel heard of the judgment which the king had judged, and they feared the king, for they saw that the wisdom of God was in him to do judgment. Wouldn't this be quite something to see? To live in Israel under the time of Solomon. How many perplexing questions would you like to take to Solomon? You know, let's see what he says. You know, God says, I've given him great wisdom, so there was none before like him and none after. Well, sure enough, he can give a wise answer. During the reign of Solomon, Israel prospered. They had peace and abundance. Wouldn't that be a great time to live in Israel? But look at it here. There's harlots in Israel. And they're not afraid to come before the king. And they're not afraid to say, there was no stranger with us in the house. I'm like, well, you know, come on. These women should have been stoned. Mm-hmm. But they had all confidence that they weren't going to be stoned. Otherwise, they would have hid. You know, in the 1800s, it was an offense for a prostitute to appear before the Queen of England. That was just unheard of. You didn't do that. But here, in Israel, they have the commandments, they've got this wise king. It's like, why is this? Well, even in the best of times, sometimes the worst of things have happened.
Right.
There's examples the other way, too. Let's go on to Nehemiah. In chapter 5, starting at verse 1. And there was a great cry of the people and of their wives against their brethren the Jews. For there were that said, we, our sons and our daughters are many. Therefore we take up corn for them, that we may eat and live. Some also there were that said, we have mortgaged our lands, vineyards, and houses, that we might buy corn because of the dearth. There were also that said, we have borrowed money for the king's tribute, and that upon our lands and vineyards. Yet now our flesh is as the flesh of our brethren, and our children as their children. And lo, we bring unto bondage our sons and our daughters to be servants. And some of our daughters are brought under bondage already. Neither is it in our power to redeem them, for other men have our lands and vineyards. What a strait that would be to be in. What a circumstance. You can't even feed your family. Go on to the next chapter. Starting in verse 1 again. Now it came to pass when Sanballat and Tobiah and Geshem, the Arabian, and the rest of our enemies heard that I had builded the wall and that there was no breach left therein, though at that time I had not set up the doors upon the gates, that Sanballat and Geshem sent unto me, saying, come, let us meet together in some one of the villages in the plain of Ono. But they thought to do me mischief. And I sent messengers unto them, saying, I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease whilst I leave it and come down to you? Yet they sent unto me four times after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner. Then sent Sanballat his servant unto me in like manner, the fifth time, with an open letter in his hand, wherein was written, it is reported among the heathen, and Geshemu saith it, that thou and the Jews think to rebel, for which cause thou buildest the wall, that thou mayest be their king, according to these words. And thou hast appointed prophets to preach of thee at Jerusalem, saying, There is a king in Judah, and now shall it be reported to the king according to these words. Come now, therefore, and let us take counsel together. What a tight spot to be in. You're trying to build the walls, and you get the walls put up, and they say, We're going to tell the king you're building the walls so you can rebel. It's like, there's no such thing. On to chapter 13. And starting in verse 4. And before this, Eliashib, the priest, having the oversight of the chamber of the house of our God, was allied unto Tobiah. He's allied to the enemy. And he had prepared for him a great chamber, where aforetime they laid the meat offering and the frankincense and the vessels and the tithes of the corn, the new wine and the oil, which was commanded to be given to the Levites and the singers and the porters and the offerings of the priests. But in all this time was I not at Jerusalem, for in the 32nd year of Artaxerxes, king of Babylon, came I unto the king, and after certain days obtained I leave of the king. And I came to Jerusalem, and understood of the evil that Eliashib did for Tobiah, in preparing him a chamber in the court of the house of God. And it grieved me sore, therefore I cast forth all the household stuff of Tobiah out of the chamber. Then I commanded, and they cleansed the chambers, and thither brought I again the vessels of the house of God, with the meat offerings and the frankincense. And I perceived that the portions of the Levites had not been given them, for the Levites and the singers that did the work were fled, every one to his field. Now this would be frustrating. You rebuild Jerusalem, you get the temple set up where we're worshiping God again, you've got the Levites here and everything. He goes back to Babylon, he comes back later, and they've got Tobiah's stuff in the house of God. The Levites have forsaken the house and they're all farming because they're not being given the tithes. What a frustrating time. Is this the time of light or the time of darkness? I mean, this would be really discouraging. But in the middle of this, back up to chapter 8. Something worth taking note of. Verse 13. And on the second day were gathered together the chief of the fathers of the people, the priests, the Levites, unto Ezra the scribe, even to understand the words of the law. And they found written in the law, which the Lord had commanded by Moses, that the children of Israel should dwell in booths in the feast of the seventh month, and that they should publish and proclaim in all their cities and in Jerusalem, saying, Go forth unto the mountain, and fetch olive branches, and pine branches, and myrtle branches, and palm branches, and branches of thick trees, to make booths, as it is written. So the people went forth and brought them, and made themselves booths, every one upon the roof of his house, and in their courts, and in the courts of the house of God, and in the street of the water gate, and in the street of the gate of Ephraim. And all the congregation of them that were come again out of the captivity made booths, and sat under the booths, for since the day of Joshua the son of Nun, unto that day had not the children of Israel done so. And there was very great gladness. Also day by day, from the first day unto the last day, he read in the book of the law of God, and they kept the feast 7 days, and on the eighth day was a solemn assembly according unto the manner. How do you like that? They read it in the law. This is what the law says. Okay, they go do it. And it hadn't been done since the time of Joshua.
1,000 years.
Even under David, Solomon, the revival was under Hezekiah and Josiah. All that time they hadn't done that. There in verse 18 it says, you know, on the eighth day they kept a solemn assembly according unto the manner. Well, what manner? What was written down? They didn't have anybody tell them, well, we do it this way. No, they just went and read in the book. Oh, that's how we do it. That's how they did it. Wouldn't that be a wonderful time to be in Israel? But what about all these other things going on around that?
Yeah.
Oftentimes, in the midst of the worst of times, there's the best of times. Good things happen in bad times, and bad things happen in good times. Good things happen in good times, and bad things happen in bad times. Just take a little bit of a look at Elijah in 1 Kings chapter 19. We're familiar with the story, but there in verse 13, it was so when Elijah heard it that he wrapped his face in his mantle and went out and stood in the entering in of the cave. And behold, there came a voice unto him and said, "What doest thou here, Elijah?" And he said, "I have been very jealous for the Lord God of hosts, because the children of Israel have forsaken thy covenant, thrown down thine altars, and slain thy prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek my life to take it away." And the Lord said unto him, "Go, return on thy way to the wilderness of Damascus, and when thou comest, anoint Hazael to be king of Syria, and Jehu the son of Nimshi shalt thou anoint to be king over the Israel, and Elisha the son of Shaphat of Abel-Meholah shalt thou anoint to be a prophet in thy room. And it shall come to pass that him that escapeth the sword of Hazael shall Jehu slay, and him that escapeth from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha slay." Okay, is this a good thing? Verse 18, "Yet I have left me 7,000 in Israel, all the knees which have not bowed unto Baal, and every mouth which hath not kissed him." 7,000. That would make several good-sized congregations. Yeah, they were dispersed throughout Israel. And this is not Judah, this is just Israel. Sometimes we look around and we see things aren't going very good. This is a bad time. Later you look back and you say, you know, there were good things going on there. This year, we got to look forward to a new president. What about the last one? Obama. Under Obama's administration, the courts declared same-sex marriage to be normal. Due to neglect, ISIS has been allowed to wreak havoc in Iraq and the regions around it. Defending thugs, pardoning criminals in record numbers. Protesting honest people owning guns. Scrutinizing harshly law enforcement officers. Declaring that this is not a Christian nation. And doing its best to try and make it and keep it that way. In the last 8 years, how many of us have moved here? In the last 8 years, was the beginning of the sign ministry, the billboard ministry. The last 8 years were God's crucible, the alien exposed, did Jesus correct Moses, the salvation book, many of the others revised and updated. Even in the worst of times, the best of things happen.
Right.
Now we look forward to a new president, one who promises to be more friendly to Christian biblical values. What are we going to do at that time? As someone said shortly after or around the time of World War II, he said, "I wish it needn't have happened in our time." To which someone replied, "We only have the time that was given to us. It's up to us to make the best of it. Good times or bad times, make the best of it." How do you do that? 2 Timothy 4:2. Preach the word. Be instant in season, out of season. Reprove, rebuke, exhort with all long-suffering and doctrine. For the time will come when they will not endure sound doctrine, but after their own lust shall they heap to themselves teachers having itching ears. And they shall turn away their ears from the truth and shall be turned unto fables. You know, there was times throughout history, we see it in the Old Testament, where the prophets were preaching and the Word of God caught on and there was revival. There was times when the prophets preached just as hard, just as diligent, just as right, and the Word of God was almost snuffed out. So what time do we live in? Do we live in the time of a spark that's lighting a fire, of a revival? We live in just the glow of a dying ember. Let's do what we can with the time we have, and we'll leave it to another, to a future generation, to God, to decide whether it was the best of times or it was the worst of times.
Very good.